I'm getting so cool and popular that I need my own team. Because, you know, when you think cool, popular, doesn't this come to mind? I mean, really? Come on. Obviously, if you guys were here before 10 o'clock, you had to make your way into the building, and clearly you were granted access, which is great. I know some of you had to bribe them. Some of you had to show some ID. You will not get that money back. So thank you for your donation. But you know, if you've ever been to, well, you, I don't know, I've never been to, maybe you have, maybe you're not cool and popular like me, and so you actually have been to maybe a nightclub or something, but a club that has exclusive access, you know, you've got bouncers at the door, and they're intimidating on purpose. They're usually, you know, a little bit bigger than me, because, you know, you need to be intimidating. But they're at the door there, and if you are not on the guest list, if you are not invited in, you're not getting in. And, you know, depending on how it works, and this is going to break down a little bit in my illustration for this morning, but, you know, maybe you can try to bribe the bouncer at the door to let you in. But one of the things that is really a great way to get in is maybe you're not invited, maybe you're not on the guest list, but if you're with somebody that is on the list, then you'll have access to get into the club or into the event or whatever it is. If you're like, oh, I'm with them, and they're like, okay, you can come on in. And so that's how, you know, we let Sarah come back into the building because Sarah didn't know what a bouncer was. And I guess that's okay. I'm just totally calling you out right now. It could be any Sarah in this room. And you know, we talked about it. Someone that jumps on a trampoline, that's a bouncer. Because clearly, some people aren't clubbing every night, and I think your parents are grateful for that. Okay, so it's okay not to know what a bouncer is. But the only issue is that if you try to get in, you need to have access. You need to have someone that lets you in. And we're going to be talking about that in this entire series called Temple, because the temple is the way that people were able to connect with God, or more specifically, God connected with his people. And one of the things that we're going to see today as we kind of move through what the temple looked like throughout the history of the Bible is that getting access to God was not easy. It was difficult to connect with God. And it wasn't because God is a jerk or God was, you know, cool and popular, but because God's holiness prevented people like us from having full access to him. And so, and that's actually a good thing, and we'll talk about why that is. So thank you guys. You can have a seat. I appreciate it. You can give them a hand here for, you know, doing what it is that they do. There was a lot of coordination. That was a really weak hand. Maybe you didn't let them in, or maybe like, I'm not going to applaud. I want my money back. So anyway, we're doing this series called Temple, and it's going to be 4 weeks. And what's really ironic, as I was talking to Christina as they were putting together the backdrops, which is just so cool, Solomon's temple, we said, was built, or I told them, was built in 8 years, and this took them about 8 days. It took them a lot of thought. There was a lot of work that went into that. But anyway, I was talking to her about it, and what was interesting is that we're actually going to be looking at the actual physical temple like that for half of one Sunday. But even though the whole series is called Temple, but Temple, the temple in the Bible, as the intro video showed you, was the way that people connected with God, or more specifically, like I said, the way God connected with his people. And so when we're talking about the temple, we're talking about the biblical temple. So we're not talking about necessarily like a Hindu temple or not necessarily, definitely not a Hindu temple or any other kind of temple. We're not talking about the Temple of Doom from Indiana Jones. I'm not going to be pulling anybody's heart out with my hand or anything like that. We're talking about the temple in the Bible. And this week, this Sunday, we're looking at what I'm calling the temple, because this is the temporary temple that we're going to be looking at today. And then next week, we're going to talk about the temple, and I'll explain more about the physical temple that existed during the time of King Solomon and ultimately during the time of Jesus, which technically was the third temple by the time Jesus was on the scene. And just little tidbits like, you know, Jesus went into the temple courts. That's the court outside of this area. When you see that Satan took Jesus to the top of the temple and said, throw yourself from here, like, because it was really high. So all these things you're going to see throughout the Bible of the temple are tied to this. But ultimately, the whole point of the temple was for people to connect to God. And so the point, and if you did not get the YouVersion notes, there's actually a really cool handy chart that's going to be in YouVersion. So scan that QR code if you did not already. YouVersion is totally free, but you'll have a chart. Otherwise, you're going to have to break out paper and pen. and write it down. And you're not going to be able to. I'll just be honest. You can't keep up. You're not going to be able to. You're not going to. Anyway, so the point for this Sunday is this, is that the temple brought God to his people. And like we saw in the intro video there, people were, you know, throughout history trying to connect with God. How can I become more like God? How can I can meet with God? How can I, you know, probably know the story, even if you didn't grow up in church, the Tower of Babel in Genesis, where they built this tower to try to become like God because they wanted to connect with God. And so people want to connect with God. And it has happened unsuccessfully. I'm a little poppy here. Sorry, you were starting to go over. They try to connect with God, but ultimately it never worked. But the true God, the living God of the universe, the God of the Israelites, the God of Isaac, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God who came to earth in Jesus, at least in the Old Testament, the temple was how God, instead of people trying to get to God, God came to his people. And so it's really cool. It's a really interesting thing. So let's just talk about this idea. One of the things that there's a word that you see, and you probably, you know it, even if you've never gone to church before, but you have ever sung a Christmas song, you're probably familiar with the word Emmanuel. Emmanuel, which means God with us. And it can be spelled with an I or an E, because depending on how you're transliterating it, we're not getting into all that detail. But Emmanuel was a word that meant God with us. And as we go through this series, I've made this thing up. It's totally my idea. It's totally just, you know, not biblical, not authoritative. But I'm calling it the Emmanuel scale. Because we're going to look each week of this series at how God with us gets a little bit closer. It gets a little bit better. And so this isn't on the screen, but the Emmanuel scale for today is fair. It's fair. God, this is cool. Like before, nobody had any connection with God. But today we're going to be looking at this idea that God came to connect with his people. And so we're going to look at the prequel to the Emmanuel and the Emmanuel that we know as Jesus, which again, spoiler, a couple weeks from now. But we're going to look at the prequel. You can turn on the house lights, too, there. If you guys have paper Bibles or paper and pen and you're going to draw my chart, good luck. But we're just to set up the scene, we did a series November and December called The Story. And we walked through the entire Bible. So just to help you remember where this takes place, what we're looking at this week, where it takes place in that series. And you can find it on the slideshow loop. You can go to mc3church.org/the story and look at this complete overview of the entire Bible. But this takes place in chapter 3. Chapter 3, migration. So just to give you and that was the beautiful picture of the pyramid. So chapter 1 of the story was creation. Chapter 2 was generations. And so the Israelite people, the nation of Israel, was in Egypt in slavery for 400 years. And God brought them out through 10 plagues. And again, this is all just review from that series. There were 10 plagues that eventually Pharaoh let the people go and worship God in the desert. They crossed the Red Sea. All sorts of miraculous stuff happens. And then they get to this place called Mount Sinai. And there, Moses goes to the top of Mount Sinai and gets the 10 Commandments. And so this is taking place in the 10 Commandments, during that moment, because everything that we're going to see this morning was given to Moses as instructions at the top of Mount Sinai. And so these instructions that they were given on how God was going to connect with his people. So just so you know, that's kind of where we are with the story series. You can go back and listen to that and watch it and see how it ties together. But I kind of want to be doing that every time we talk about something, just to tie it into the bigger picture. So back to the prequel to Emmanuel. The first thing we see here is the desire to tabernacle. Because the word tabernacle, which is what we're looking at this morning, the tabernacle was a temporary, it was like a tent. It was a precursor to the temple, which was a permanent building. So, you know, think about that idea. You know, maybe, and we see this on, you know, some of what's the show? Grand Designs. There's a show Kendra really likes. It's really wild. All these people spend millions and millions of pounds, because it's British, to make these homes. And many times, in order to make the sacrifice, they'll live in like a, what are they, what, a caravan, that's what they call it. Basically like a little camper. Just something kind of temporary. They would live in this temporary camper on the property while they build this massive mansion over there. And so the tabernacle is like that. It's kind of the temporary version of what would become the permanent temple. And if you're sitting here going, why do we care? Because there is so much imagery that we're going to be celebrating next month. Well, at the end of this month for the fifth Sunday. On the cross and the resurrection that points back to the temple. That points back to the tabernacle. And the word tabernacle, the Hebrew word that was used here, it literally means to dwell among, to be among. And so we see in Exodus 25, and again, we're Mount Sinai, top of the mountain. God says to Moses, and I don't even know who read it this morning. It was a voice from nowhere. Who read that? Christina. Okay. Christina read this morning for us. It says, have the people of Israel build me a holy sanctuary. And a holy sanctuary. So we're talking about a holy, it means set apart. And we sang all the songs this morning about God's holiness and how he is so far beyond us. And holiness, by the way, as a word, you know, now that you're learning stuff, holiness doesn't mean pure. That's part of it. It doesn't mean sinless. That's part of it. But holiness means that God being holy is so far beyond us, we can't even describe it. He's like holy. Like, that's literally what the word means. Like, how do you describe this God that is so far beyond us, so perfect, so pure, so sinless, so amazing? The word is holy. And so God wants the people to build a holy sanctuary. Why? So that I can live among them. And the word live among there means tabernacle. I want a tabernacle. And this is going to matter because, spoiler alert, we'll get to this next week. But John says, the word became flesh and made his, and the word means tabernacle among us. The word became flesh and tabernacled among us because the God of the universe, and we're going to get there, so don't listen, maybe listen to what I'm saying now, but we'll get to that next week. But he says, I want to live among them. And this is huge. Every other religion, every other faith, every other cult practice with their idols and all the different things of the time, we're like, we want to get to God. We want to get to God. And God says, I'm coming to you. I'm coming to you because I love you, because you are my people, because you matter. And then he says, you must build this tabernacle. It's the literal word tabernacle. And its furnishings exactly according to the pattern that I will show you. So God says to Moses, look, I'm changing everything. As the intro video said, I'm flipping the script. I'm coming to you. You don't have to try to get to me because I'm going to come to you. But it is going to be a holy sanctuary, a place that is set apart. And a sanctuary means just that, a place that is not, that's not just for everyday use. And we'll see what that looks like in a minute. And so God says, I want to tabernacle among my people, among humanity. And so that's what the tabernacle is. And just to, again, to be clear, the tabernacle that we're going to look at this morning is the temporary version of the temple. And the reason it's temporary is because the people had not yet, again, going back to the story, the people had not yet gotten to the promised land that God had promised them. And so they're going to be journeying through the desert. Now, at this time, now God knew the whole story, but at this time, Moses and the Israelites figured, okay, you know, it'll be a couple of weeks, and then we're going to be in the promised land. But of course, if you know the story, they sent spies into the land. 10 bad spies came back and said, we can't do it. 2 said, yeah, we can. And God said, fine. You don't think I can handle this? Then you're going to wander for 40 years until that generation dies off. So it ended up being 40 years, but it was a temporary dwelling because they were nomads at this point. There are probably millions of people that were moving through the desert, working their way to the promised land, the land of Israel. And so they had this temporary structure that they would set up so that they could worship God. And when they were camp, and then when camp was time to move on, they would tear it down and move on and then reset it up. So it was temporary, but everything you're going to see this morning is part of the temple, which is the permanent building of that. Does that make sense? Are you following me on this? Because it's kind of an important distinction here. That's a temporary version of the permanent thing. It's the difference between your paper, or whatever they make it out of, but your paper Starbucks mug that you get at the store versus your permanent coffee mug that's insulated and all that. Like, they both do the same job. One is temporary, one is disposable. And this wasn't disposable. They didn't. You'll see in a moment. They didn't just throw it away each time. But it was meant to be packed up and moved from place to place. So the desire to tabernacle, God's changing things, says, I'm going to live among my people, which then leads us to the next thing, which is the design for the tabernacle. And so Exodus chapters 25 through 40, and we're going to read every verse, right? No, I'm just kidding. That's a lot. But there are very specific, and it's amazing, they're so specific that we can recreate it. And actually, the tabernacle has been recreated. There's a really cool one in Lancaster. Have you guys gone to that one? Any of the LBC people gone to the one in Lancaster? It's there. Ask about it. They have a physical place that you can go visit. It's the full-size tabernacle replica. It's right behind Starbucks, ironically. But the idea is that God says, here's the instructions for this thing. And the instructions are very specific. Not just because God is a detail God, which he is, and we talked about that a few weeks ago, that God's in the details. But because God's holiness demands very specific boundaries, very specific rules, if you will. And so God shares this design for the tabernacle. And instead of reading all of these, I'm going to summarize what happened here with my chart. And if you have the YouVersion notes, you've got a square chart because YouVersion requires everything to be a 640 pixel by 640 pixel square. So just so you know, that is not to scale. Okay, there's a thing there that's a circle, or it's supposed to be a circle that's an oval. That's because it got... So just so you know, don't go drawing that someday. You know, if you're going into to a class somewhere and you're like, oh, I can draw the tabernacle for you. If it looks like that, you're not gonna. It'll be messed up a little bit. So let's look at the tabernacle. So this is the tabernacle. No, that's not the tabernacle. That's a blank screen. That's the tabernacle. And this is the chart you have there. And I put all the things there. But let's kind of label it as to what is happening here. So you've got here around the outside edge. This is from above, by the way. There is a fence. There is a fence that goes all the way around the property, and it has a gate down at the one end, and the gate is there. There's the gate, and the gate is let's see, how wide is the gate? I have it here somewhere. I think it was 30 feet wide. The gate, and the whole thing was 150 feet long. Oh, I have a pointer. I forgot. And earlier, when the haze was going, I had like a lightsaber, but it doesn't work now. Okay, so this is the fence, and it was 7.5 feet high, and it was fabric, and there were posts all around it. And because it was, you know, portable, it was fabric. They would take it apart and be able to pack it up and go. And then there was a gate at this end, so everybody came into the gate at this end. And during the Stuck series we did about a year ago, where we looked at the wandering in the Book of Numbers, I actually shared a chart with how the Israelite people were camped around, and everybody was camped around the tabernacle. And so, like, you can't see my pointer, but there were, you know, three tribes over here, three tribes were camped over here, three tribes there, 12 tribes of Israel. And the people that worked the tabernacle were the Levites. They were the descendants of Levi, Aaron and Levi, the tribe of Levi. But Aaron was a Levite. He was one of the high priests. And so the Levite people were the worship leaders. They were the ones that helped the people encounter God. And every year there was a high priest who was in charge of everything. They were like the boss Levite. They were the one that did that. And so that's just so you're aware. So you've got this fence around here. I'm going to turn it this way. And it was 150 feet. It was 75 feet this way, 150 feet this way. And so it was 15 feet wider than this building. So just for perspective, that's... So 7 feet each way, or 15 that way, or 15 that way, or 10 that way, and 5 that way. I mean, do you see that math I just pulled out right there? Anyway, so they have a gate, and so everyone would enter there, not everyone, but the people, when it was come time, would enter there, and they would come into this area here, which was the courtyard. So you've got a courtyard there, and that kind of represents all of this. And the first thing that you would encounter if you came into the tabernacle, which again, if you came into the temple courts, which we'll talk about next week, instead of being a fence, this was a wall. And part of that wall is still in Israel today. They call it the Wailing Wall, and that's where the Jewish people will go to pray, because it's the remaining wall of the original temple. Get it? Get it. Okay, so you go into the gate, and the first thing you encounter here is called the Brazen Altar. And it was called brazen, not because it was bold, or because it did things that it shouldn't have done, or said things that it should never have said. Keep your mouth shut. No, it was brazen because it was covered in brass. So that means it's a brass altar. And this brazen altar, this was the altar. This was the most important part, and we're going to come back and talk about this a little bit more. But it was made out of wood and overlaid with brass, and it was 7 feet, 7.5 feet by 7.5 feet square, and there were points up at the top of it, and then it was 4.5 feet tall. There was actually a ramp so that you could get up to it so that the priests could work. And what would happen is that this is where an animal that was sacrificed would be sacrificed. And there were coals in there, and they would burn the offering on the altar there. They would, when the animal would come in, we'll talk about that in a second, but they would put blood on the four corners of the altar. And I'm not going to go into why that's there. We'll talk about that in a second. But that was the first thing they did. That's where the animals that were sacrificed as an offering for their sin were sacrificed. And the priest would, again, do all the work. So a person would come in and offer their animal, and they would be sacrificed on the altar. Then the next thing we've got here is this thing. It's just supposed to be a circle. It is called the laver. And if you know Spanish or other languages, but lavar is the word to means to wash. And so the laver, it's just another version, it's not Spanish, by the way, but laver was a big wash bowl. Probably looked like a bird bath. And then when we get to the temple next week, the physical temple, it actually had one. It was one of the largest pieces of bronze, I believe it was. It was 15 feet wide. It was a gigantic wash area. And so it was, I keep turning around, it was polished brass, is what it was made of, and it was probably, we don't have exact dimensions on it, but it was, you know, something like this probably, because that seems like the thing it should be. And it was just a few feet high, and every priest that served here would have to wash in the laver every morning when they got on the grounds, when it was time to work, when they got to work. They didn't punch their card, they would go wash in the laver. And then they have to wash every time before they would walk into the tabernacle proper, which we'll get to in a second. And so they needed to wash. And the rules, if you want to read through Exodus 25 through 40, and again, now maybe you know this description, and you read through it, like, oh, okay, I kind of get this. Because otherwise you're like, what is going on here? But they would have to wash different ways, different times, because these were people that needed to go into the presence of God. But I'm going to hold that thought because I'm going to come back to that as well. So the laver was there. They would wash themselves. Any Israelite person could come into the gate with their offering. But from here on out, it was only priests that were allowed into what is called the tabernacle proper. And that is this, right? Is that what next? Yeah. The tabernacle proper. This is a physical building that is right there. That building was 45 feet long by, let's get it right here, 15 feet wide and 15 feet high. So that's probably the height of this corner of the building. It's 22 feet to the peak of the roof here. Maybe it's a little lower than that. Maybe about there. And it was covered with four layers of cloth over the top. They're not sure if it was tented or if it was just a flat roof, but it was waterproof and completely covered with four different types of material, and the top layer being some kind of tanned hide. They think it might have been seal skins, not the singer, but the animals. Or they even say maybe manatee. Like there's something that was over it, that waterproofed the whole thing, that was over the top. So it was completely covered. Anything else you need to know about that? No. So that was it. It was 15 feet high, and only the high priests were allowed to go in. There was the entrance there through a curtain. And then in the middle, about two-thirds, not in the middle, but it was divided into thirds, two-thirds here and a third there, and that's not quite the scale, was this thing, a multicolored another curtain that is called the veil, that is called the temple or the tabernacle or the temple veil. Wait, the temple veil. I remember Jesus. Hold on that thought. We'll get to that next week. But the veil was there to separate the tabernacle into two-thirds and one-third. And you're like, this is so boring. And just wait with me here. The veil was there, and it was super thick. And again, we'll talk more about this next week. It was made of multicolored fabric. And on the embroidered? I guess embroidered. That's what you do, right? Embroidered on the veil were what are called cherubim. And cherubim are an angelic-like creature. They're not, you know, Jerry dies after Tom kills him, Tom and Jerry, and he, you know, suddenly has a halo and wings. Like, that is not this. These were special, angelic, kind of amazing beings. And every time you see cherubim, often shortened to cherub, and when you hear cherub, you think of like a naked little, you know, what's that guy that, Cupid, yeah. you knew what I was doing, like, okay, that's weird. but a cherubim, anytime you encounter cherubim in the Bible, you're near God's holiness. So just remember that too, just as something to tuck in the back of your mind. If you read about a cherub, God's holiness is nearby. Because they were kind of like the guardians of God's holiness. Not that they actually were, because this was just a curtain. But it was super thick. It was 15 feet tall, at least in the tabernacle. It's going to be even taller in the temple, the permanent temple, because it's larger. But it's separated two parts. And the part over here, the outer area, if you will, because they would come in the door, this was called the holy place. That was the holy place. And that is where most of the things that the priests would do would be done, would be in the holy place. And we'll talk about what they do here in a moment. But then behind the curtain was a place called the most holy place. Or another way it's worded is the holy of holies. So if you've ever heard the phrase, the holy of holies, there was an old like 80s song or 90s song about, I come to the holy of holies, you know, like that. And you had to sway like that because that was the 90s. And Wait till Jumpstart. You get the 90s rush back, right? Anyway, but it was called the Holy of Holies or the Most Holy Place because this is a very, very special place, and we'll talk about why in just a moment. But in the Holy Place, there were three items. And again, we're looking at a top-down view. The first item here was called the lampstand. And another word for lampstand is menorah. Menorah, not menor. Menorah, okay? So like Hanukkah, and there's a reason Hanukkah talks about lighting candles on a lampstand. But they had seven buds, if you will, had seven lamps. That's what you call it. It was one lampstand, had seven lamps at the top, and it was really wild. It was one solid piece of gold that they hammered into making this lampstand, and it's got buds on them that represent the tribes of Israel, and there's a bunch of stuff there. I'm not going to get into all that. But there were seven lamps, and if you poured oil, they had wicks in the top, and they were lit and ran by oil, and if they poured oil into the top lamp, the middle one, it actually distributed to all the other things there. And so the lampstand was in there for multiple reasons, but mostly for light. Because this was completely dark. Oh, by the way, the building itself was made out of wood covered in gold, of planks that were covered. But it was all covered by this. The sides were made out of wood covered with, I think it was gold or was it bronze? I forget off the top of my head. We'll have to read the Bible. And that the whole thing was covered. So it was dark in there. And so the lampstand provided light. And that was, you know, there's multiple references to being the light of the world. And when you read through the Bible, there's a lot of references about light that have to do with the lampstand in the tabernacle temple. Okay. Then up here, we have a thing that's called the table of showbread. It could be spelled S-H-O-W, S-H-E-W. It's also called the table of the bread of presence. There's a bunch of different names for it, but it was a table. And this table, it was, 3 feet. Yeah, 3 feet this way and 1.5 feet this way. And it was about 2.5 feet tall. And it had, the most important thing on it was it had two plates. And on these plates were six pieces of bread per plate. Six pieces of bread, and they were unleavened bread, if you know, because right before this moment, before they got to Mount Sinai, there was the Passover, and God said, tonight I'm going to deliver you from Egypt, so you're going to make bread, but you don't have time to wait for it to rise. So you're going to make bread without yeast, and that's called unleavened. Leaven is yeast. You're going to make bread that doesn't have time to rise because you don't have time to wait because you're going to be out of here in the middle of the night, and God did that. He used the Passover to finally have Pharaoh send the Israelites out. So we had six pieces of bread each, which is a total of 12 tribes, and they represented each tribe. And they were replaced regularly because it was a reminder that God was the one that provided for their needs. And so every day that the priest would come in here and serve on behalf of the people that would meet them at the gate, he would be reminded, you know what, God provides for my needs. And maybe this isn't part of the point, but maybe we should just set up a bread somewhere in our house. Maybe every time you walk in the door to say, wait, I'm about to stress out about this job problem. I got this bill coming due. My car has this issue. But that bread reminds me that God provides for my needs. Not my job, not my taxes, not my bills, but my God. And that's what it was for them. It was a reminder. The table also had there was a pitcher with oil so that they could put it into the lampstand. It had some other things for incense, which we'll talk about in a moment. So it was the table. That's where things sat. But the table of the bread of presence or the showbread was the most important part. It was made out of wood overlaid with gold as well. There's a lot of gold in here, a lot of money. And the reason, which we didn't look at this, but the reason they were able to do all this out of gold was because, again, there's this very little small verse that you probably don't even remember. But in the Exodus moment, when at the night of the Passover, they said, okay, get out, get out. And they were so, the Egyptians were so, they wanted the Israelites out of their hair, get them away. They said, here, take whatever you want. Here, take all of my stuff. And it said that the Israelites or the Egyptians were favorably disposed. Which way does that work? They were favorably disposed, meaning the Israelites left with tons of stuff because the Egyptians were like, here, just take it. Just get away. I don't care. Just get out of here. We do not want you here anymore. And so they had all of this stuff that God had provided because he was working out a plan to build a place where people could meet with him. And then the final item here is this, which is the altar of incense. The altar of incense was also wood overlaid with gold. It was about 1.5 feet, excuse me, it was 1.5 feet square. So it was, you know, not very big. And it was about 2.5 feet tall. And it was a place where they would burn incense, and it was right up next to the veil. It was in the presence of the cherubim, and the incense was something that they would bring in daily, and the smoke would rise. It would smell good, but it would arise, and the Bible often talks about prayers rising up before God. And David even says, God, hear my prayer. May it rise up before you, because David understood how this worked. And so the altar of incense was there where the priests would offer incense and the smoke would go up right in the presence of God, saying, there's a connection. There's a connection with God. And we'll come back to that connection next week. And then that leads to this is the most holy place. And there was one item in the most holy place. And that was this. That was the Ark of the Covenant. And for what it's worth, this series is kind of themed around Indiana Jones. The movie, The Raiders of the Lost Ark. The Ark itself, I'm not saying any of the other stuff. There's nothing about melting people's faces, okay? The German Nazis, any of that other stuff, that's a fun movie, whatever. But the Ark that they made is probably pretty accurate. So if you are like, oh, let's watch Indiana, like that is probably pretty accurate. It was a box overlaid with gold. Some say that the top of the box was probably 3 inches thick of gold. And gold was worth a lot then as it is now. And on the top, there were two cherubim made out of gold that were facing each other over the middle. And in the Ark of the Covenant, it was a lid. They could take the lid off, and inside there were three things. Now, at this time, they weren't all there yet. But there were ultimately three things that were kept in the Ark. There were the tablets of stone that God gave, where we would call them the Ten Commandments, but it was more than just that. You guys will have, for the jump starter, you have a really cool thing. You're going to be able to do this with your families this month. But I don't know why they always have they're square, and then they have the round top. I don't know where that came from. So if somebody can find that out and let me know. You know what I'm talking about? Like the stone tablets, they're always like square or rectangular, but then the top is like curved over. I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's a thing, if it's just fun. But anyway, so those were in there, the stone tablets that God gave the law. There was a pot, a jar, that had manna in it, because manna was how God provided for them miraculously while they were in the wilderness. And then it had Aaron's staff that budded, B-U-D-D-E-D. And that staff was there, and we talked about that in the Stuck series because it was demonstrating which priest, which leader was the real leader. And so, again, you can go back to the Stuck series. You can read that in Numbers about why Aaron's staff budded. But they were kept in there. And the thing about this holy, most holy place or the Holy of Holies is that only one person could go in there, and that was the high priest. Only one. And it was after multiple things of ceremonial washing and the laver. They had to do all sorts of things. They had to offer multiple sacrifices on the altar. And they could only go into the Holy of Holies one day a year. It was called the Day of Atonement. And they would go in there and they would offer a sacrifice here. And their hands would be covered with blood. And they would go in here and they would come before the altar or for the ark. And they would take the blood and they would sprinkle it right on the top. And the word atone means to cover over. It doesn't mean to remove, which we'll talk about later. It doesn't mean to remove. And so the atonement, the Day of Atonement, the blood would cover over their sins, meaning it's cool for now, but it's not completely removed. And so they would place this, and the word atone is kippur. And so the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, was the day that they would go in and they would sprinkle the blood on the top. And the top of the ark was called the mercy seat. And it was called the mercy seat because that is where, and again, you might have heard that phrase, that is where God's presence dwelled. That God dwelled in the most holy place. And that's why that no one could go in there except the one day a year. And you actually, there's a couple of instances in the Bible where someone dies for not honoring this because the holiness of God dwelt above the Ark of the Covenant. And no human can be in the presence of a holy God, I'm getting ahead of my notes, and be in the presence of a holy God and live. And so it was called the mercy seat. And once, one day a year, Yom Kippur, the high priest would go in covered in blood to say, I need your mercy. We need your mercy. This animal died, and I want you to cover over the sins of the entire nation. But they were never completely taken away. So that's what the tabernacle looks like from above. You've got that chart there. And again, the temple, we'll see next week, but we're not going to get into the full details because it's basically the same thing, just kind of biggie-sized. It's a little bit bigger. There's a little bit more, and certainly more permanent as we talk about that. So here's just a quick video. It's like they probably recorded it back when the Bible was written. That's why it looks so just really janky. Is that the right word? Can I use that word? It looks really bad. But it's a little kind of walkthrough of what you might see here. So I'm going to narrate it for you. So please watch. Okay, so here you have the curtain, or the fence all the way around the edge. There's the brazen altar. There's the presence of God, which we'll talk about in just a moment, dwelling above the ark, which is inside there. And there's the tabernacle proper. Now we're moving in here. And they were using drone technology back then when they recorded this. And so there's a gate there they would go in. There's the brazen altar. And there you can kind of see the four horns of the altar. And there it goes quickly. Okay. And here's the laver. And they would wash there, the priests, before they would go in. It's really shiny water. And they would wash. And then they would go inside. Okay, they're still washing. Then here's the tabernacle proper. The curtain would open. They'd open the curtain. They'd kind of squeeze in there. And then you'd find the outer room here, which is called the holy place. And over, where are we? There's the table of showbread. And you can kind of see there's the bread. Okay, I can't see it anymore. There's the altar of incense. Okay, and then there's the lampstand. It's lamping. It's lamping there. Okay, and then you'd go past that, opening the veil, which they wouldn't open like that. And you'd go in, and this is the holy of holies, or the most holy place. There's the ark. There's the cherubim. That's called the mercy seat. There's the lid. And then there's God's presence. There you go. So we want to thank Moses's tech team for putting that together for us. But that at least gives you a physical view of what that would look like. So now you know the history. That leads us to one more part here with it. So you've got the desire to tabernacle. There's the design for tabernacle. And then you see the dwelling in the tabernacle. You can hit the house lights back again. In Exodus 40, the tabernacle is now complete. Okay? And then we read this in verse 34 to 38. It says, Then the cloud covered the tabernacle, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. The glory of the Lord is God's holiness. That's all that God is. His amazingness, his power, his wow in a physical form. And so it says, the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses could no longer enter the tabernacle because the cloud had settled down over it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Now, ultimately, the glory of the Lord then kind of stays contained to the Holy of Holy place, because that's why there's the curtain there. That's why no one could go in there, because if they went in there, you wouldn't survive. We'll see that in a moment. And it said, now, whenever the cloud lifted from the tabernacle, this is all part of the story. Whenever the cloud lifted from the tabernacle, the people of Israel would set out on their journey following it. But if the cloud did not rise, they remained where they were until it lifted. The cloud of the Lord hovered over the tabernacle during the day, and at night, fire glowed inside the cloud so that the whole family of Israel could see it. This continued through all their journeys. Because again, the tabernacle was a tent. They would pitch the tent. It was time that the cloud would go and start moving. Okay, it's time to go. Here we go. We pack up and go. And the Levites were the ones in charge of all of that and all the leading of the worship and everything. And so this matters because we're going to look at next week some other issues related to the temple. But at this moment, God's presence is now among his people. And it's huge. It's incredible. Because before that, God is far off. He's distant. And obviously you had God speaking to individuals and people. But now, as it said, everyone could look and see. You could get up in the morning, wake up out of your tent, look out, because your tent was facing the tabernacle. Look out and you would see, there's the cloud. You could wake up in the middle of the night and look out and say, oh, there's the fire. God is still here. God is with us. And if it was time to move, they would move. So that's the prequel to this Emmanuel, this God with us, because we're not quite there. God is among his people, but there's still this bouncer-esque kind of problem because they can't quite get in with God because of his holiness. And so the temple brought God to his people. But like I said, there was a bouncer at the door. And the bouncer at the door wasn't God being like, no, you're not cool enough, or no, you need to bribe me, or anything like that. The bouncer at the door was God's holiness. And so the first thing we see here is that God is holy, because there's a problem, with God's presence on earth. And that's that we can't approach him. And we actually talked about this in the series called Setting the Record Straight. That's on the slideshow loop as well. You can find it on our website, where we looked at what is holiness and how do all these pieces work together. But I'll give you a quick summary. The first thing is that God is holy, which again is God's everything, God's amazingness, God's all power. He's so separate. And so because God is holy, the tabernacle needed a veil. The tabernacle needed a veil. If the veil wasn't there, everybody be dead. Not because God's getting you, but because of how holy he is. And so there was a veil placed there. He is completely other. He's totally separate. I have here, God's glory is the sum total of his greatness. Therefore, anything imperfect cannot, hear me, anything imperfect cannot exist in his presence. Not should not, cannot. This isn't an issue of like, you know, okay, yeah, you're under God's holiness. There's snipers on the roof ready to take you out. That has nothing to do with it. It's not God smiting people. It's because he's so holy and so perfect that us in his presence, that's the end of us. We can't handle God's amazingness. So the tabernacle needs a veil. And in Exodus 33, there's a couple of passages here, which is really cool. Why there's this moment here in the middle of this. Moses is still at the top of Mount Sinai, and he says to God, he's on, you know, good terms with God, and of course has seen God do amazing things through him, parting the Red Sea, the ten plagues, etc. And this is that Moses said to God, "Show me your glory," which is kind of gutsy. But Moses and God were that close. They had that kind of a relationship. He said, "God, can you just show me all that you are? I want to see you." And the Lord said, "I will cause my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on who I have mercy, and I will have compassion on who I have compassion." Like, that's part of God's glory. That's a statement. But he says, "But you cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." He says, Moses, if I showed you my glory, you'd be dead. Because you can't handle my glory. Because you're just, well, not God. And so what ends up happening in the story is that he says, I'm gonna pass by. Once I'm gone, I'm gonna hide you. You're gonna hide in this rock here, and I'm gonna cover you with my hand so you can't see a thing. You're gonna be in total darkness. I'm gonna come by, and then once I'm gone, and it says here, what does it say? You can't see my face. Okay, it doesn't say it in this part. But it talks about, like, you would just kind of get the after effects. Kind of like, you know, maybe you've been somewhere and somebody was smoking. And they were smoking, like, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes before, but they were gone. They're not there actively smoking, but you're like, someone is smoking here. You kind of smell that, kind of the after effects. I mean, this is kind of a weird illustration of it, but you know what I mean? And he says, I'm just kind of let you to get a sense of that. And it says that when he removed his hands, Moses saw his glory. And then from that moment on, his face shone. Shining. It was so, because just a taste of God's glory, Moses' face was so shiny, he had to wear a veil over his face because it was freaking people out. Because Moses is just shiny, like, wah, everywhere he goes. So he wore a veil. Because just even the hint of God's glory did that to him. So that's God's glory. And then over in Leviticus 17, which, by the way, the Levites were the worship leaders, the book of Leviticus is essentially the worship manual for the Levites. So that's why it's called Leviticus. Levi, the tribe of Levi. We had Levi up here protecting us. All right, so the Lord says to Moses, this is the actual tabernacle, warn your brother Aaron not to enter the most holy place behind the inner curtain whenever he chooses. And we already talked about this, but here's the actual text. Because if he does, he will die. For the ark's cover, the place of atonement, the mercy seat, is there. And I myself am present in the cloud above the atonement cover. So he says, look, Moses, your son, your generation, your family are the Levites, you're the priests. And Aaron is the high priest. And he says, look, don't let Aaron go back behind that curtain because he will die. I know he's the high priest, but that's where my glory is. And so there are rules to follow for how you can approach, but do not go behind the veil. And then over in Hebrews chapter 9, so now we're in the New Testament. Jesus, not that you didn't already know this, but he dies on the cross. He rose again. And the book of Hebrews is written to Jewish followers of Christ to help them understand some things, to kind of clarify, because these Jewish people are like, well, what about the Old Testament law? And the writer of Hebrews is like, let me show you how this works. And so in Hebrews chapter 9, kind of summarizes this. He says, but only the high priest ever entered the most holy place, and only once a year. And he always offered blood for his own sins and for the sins of the people, the sins the people had committed in ignorance. By these regulations, the Holy Spirit revealed that the entrance to the most holy place was not freely open as long as the tabernacle and the system it represented, meaning the temple as well, were still in use. This is an illustration pointing to the present time, for the gifts and sacrifices that the priests offer are not able to cleanse the consciences of the people who bring them. What is that saying? That this wasn't enough. It covered over, but it wasn't enough to completely remove. And if you're like, well, what's the answer? You'll have to keep reading Hebrews, because I'm not going to give you an answer right now. So the first thing, the reason there's a bouncer door is because God is holy, so the tabernacle needed a veil. Because of that. The tabernacle wasn't to protect God, it was to protect the people. Human beings from the presence of God. The second thing, and this is related to it, is that we are dirty. We are dirty. So the tabernacle needed a laver. There needed to be a spot for the priests before they could even enter the tabernacle, before they could even begin their worship, connecting to God. They needed to wash themselves because they're dirty, because you're dirty, because I'm dirty, because we are dirty people. Romans 3:23 says this. You're probably familiar with this. We've talked about this before. For all have sinned. We're all sinners, and that sin taints us. We are now dirty. But here's a part you probably never really thought about if you're familiar with Romans 3:23. And all fall short of the glory of God. The glory of God. So we are not able to be in the presence of the glory of God because we're sinners. We are all dirty. And so over in Exodus chapter 30, here's the specific rule about the laver. He says, make a bronze basin with its bronze stand for washing. Again, we've already talked about this. Place it between the tent of meeting, which is another name for the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, and the altar, and put water in it. Aaron and his sons are to wash their hands and feet with water from it. Whenever they enter the tent of meeting, again, another name for tabernacle, it's a tent, they shall wash with water so that they will not die. This past week, a couple of members of my family, there's only three of us in the house, so you can figure out who those members were, not me, had a wonderful stomach bug. I kind of felt like this. I want to wash my hands so I do not die, because I don't want it. And I survived. I made it through all 5 nights. Last night was like the 5th night, and there's a little reference to Freddy there. But if I made it to the 5th night, I'm like, okay, because then I made it into Sunday. I'm okay. Like, if it hits me tomorrow or this afternoon, it's not preferred, but I needed to make it to today. But this was even more than that. It's like, if they are not washing appropriately, they will die. And again, there's some examples of that in the Bible where people didn't follow, the Levites did not follow the rules appropriately and were killed. Anyway, also, when they approach the altar to minister by presenting a food of offering to the Lord, when they go to the altar, they shall wash their hands and feet. They will not die. This will be a lasting ordinance for Aaron and his descendants for generations to come. They needed to wash because they were dirty, because they were sinners, because we are sinners. We need to wash. We need to get clean before God. Over in James, we looked at this, I think last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. James says this. He says, come near to God and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. That is a reference to this, to the labor. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. We are dirty. And so the humans are dirty. And so the tabernacle needed a laver. It needed a way for people to get clean. But it wasn't enough because you know what? Every day, they had to wash again. And, I mean, that's practical, right? We get that. Like, oh, I washed my hands today. I'm good. I mean, there was a time, and I've got multiple kids. And I'm not saying this always happened. And I can definitely say it happened to my brother. I'll say that. I'll call him out. But he'd be like, oh, I took a shower last week. I'm good. Like, dude, you're like pushing 6 feet. You play sports. You're 14. You can't take one shower a month. You need to keep taking showers. But it wasn't enough. And so, again, all I'm doing is I'm saying, getting to God, there's a bouncer there because of these issues. And then the final thing we see because of this bouncer at the door is that sin is costly. Sin is costly. So the tabernacle needed an altar. See, sin requires death. Sin requires death. That is the only way to solve the sin problem. And in Romans 6:23, Paul says it this way. When you sin, the pay you get is death. NIV says the wages of sin is death. It means the same thing. When you sin, the pay you get is death. Sin equals death. Sin equals death. Sin equals death. If you are a sinner, you're dying. If you are a sinner and you do not get washed, if you do not have your sins removed, you're going to hell, which is eternal death. And I left a little spoiler in here for you, so we're not totally discouraged. But God gives us the gift of eternal life. That's because of what Christ Jesus our Lord has done. And we're going to talk all about that next week. But then going into the rules of Leviticus, of the rules of the tabernacle, and this is something I said I was going to come back to. In Leviticus chapter 4, it says this. If any of the common people, so this is just what the explanation of what the altar was for. If any person, the common people of Israel, sin by violating one of the Lord's commands, meaning if you're a sinner, if you sin, but they don't realize it, they're still guilty, which is an interesting side note. Even if you don't realize it, you're still guilty. When they become aware of their sin, they must bring as an offering for their sin a female goat. And there were different layers of whether you bring a goat, a bull, a bird, depending on how much money you have. But the principle remains the same. You would bring this animal to the offering. To the tabernacle. You'd bring it in there inside the gate. And it says they must lay a hand on the head of the sin offering. And while their hand is on the head of that offering, other passage says you confess that sin. God, here's what I did this week. And while your hand is touching that goat, and it was supposed to be the best, you give him the best, the one that was without blemish, the spotless lamb, whatever it is, whatever the animal was, you would put your hand on it, and while you were doing that, the high priest would slit its throat. And that animal would die in your hands, its blood pouring out. Then the priest would take the blood, and well, it says there, the priest will burn the fat on the altar, and it'll be a pleasing aroma to the Lord. It says they would take the blood, and they would sprinkle it on the corners of the altar. Then they would burn the offering on the altar. And through this process, the priest will purify the people, making them right with the Lord, and they will be forgiven. But they had to keep doing it over and over and over because they kept sinning. And it was never enough to remove the sin, only cover over, only kapur it, only atone for it. And so over in Hebrews, again, Hebrews explaining to Jewish followers of Jesus, the old system under the law of Moses was only a shadow. Oh, praise God. A dim preview of the good things to come. So the law, this stuff that you have to do over and over, this is not the end. It's just a temporary thing of something better to come. Not the good things themselves. The sacrifices under that system were repeated again and again, year after year, but they were never able to provide perfect cleansing, for those who came to worship. If they could have provided perfect cleansing, the sacrifices would have stopped. If you can wash your hands once and be clean forever, you wouldn't keep washing. For the worshipers would have been purified once for all time, and their feelings of guilt would have disappeared. But instead, those sacrifices actually reminded them of their sins year after year. For it is not possible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. That system wasn't enough. There has to be something better. Because there's a bouncer at the door keeping humans from interacting, from getting directly to God. You need to be invited in. And if you come in, it's only through the priest. It's only through the dead animal. But there isn't direct access. Because God is holy. We are dirty. And sin is costly. So God designed the temple for people to come, for God and the people to come together. The temple brought God to his people. But it really wasn't the best solution. Something better is coming. But you're going to have to wait till next Sunday to find out what it is. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. And God, I know that as Steph and I were talking about ignition upstairs, like this is a history lesson, but God, please do not allow it to just sit with us as history, as a bunch of facts. May we see how incredible you are and how unworthy we are. May we recognize that we're broken. And even this system where you were able to connect with your people on some level wasn't perfect. That not everyone had direct access, and frankly, only one person had direct access to you only once a year. God, I pray that as we would see that, we would recognize our own sinfulness and recognize how costly our sin is. God, I pray that you would open our eyes and our hearts to want, to long for something new, something better than this system of trying and working to try to earn your favor, because it's never enough. In Jesus' name, amen.